hatred towards the Jewish people is not a new concept, and neither is the double standard to which Israel and the Jewish people are consistently held, especially during wartime. But last week, even I was surprised by what I saw. If we recall, a short few weeks ago, when we were the victims of atrocious attacks involving people being burnt alive and the beheading of babies, the world did not want to believe that these horrible atrocities were committed. The media, as well as the general population, refused to accept that this is what happened without some concrete evidence. Now, playing devil's advocate, I can understand that this is an extremely difficult notion to accept, that human beings would perpetrate such atrocities. But last week, when Hamas and when the Gaza Health Administration or organization came out and said that Israel bombed a hospital, killing 500 people, there was no need and no requirement for proof, for evidence, for anything concrete whatsoever. The world media took it as fact on its face. Not only were they willing to accept this idea with absolutely no evidence, not a single shred of evidence, after they demanded evidence that Hamas would do what we claimed that they did, they accepted this notion from the very people who not 2 weeks ago committed these atrocities. Hamas said that Israel did this. We require no evidence whatsoever. It's as though people halfway around the world, without a dog in the fight, with no particular interest in either Israel or the Palestinians being correct, are desperate to see us as the bad guys every single time. And that got me thinking a lot about anti-Semitism, the origin of anti-Semitism, and the cause of anti-Semitism. And what I mean is the true cause. So I'll explain what exactly my thoughts are on the matter. Throughout the Torah and throughout Tanakh and throughout Jewish history, the Jewish people tend to be hated, despised, and blamed wherever they go. And you can see this as early as the Avot. So Yitzchak Avinu enters into some sort of agreement with Avimelech in Gerar, at which point Yitzchak starts planting and his fields do quite well. And the fields produce about 100 times what they were expected to produce. At which point Yitzchak is actually kicked out of Gerar because he had become prosperous at the expense of the people around him. Now, of course, that's preposterous. Right? Yitzchak's field doing well didn't mean that anyone else's field wasn't doing well. Right? They were just frustrated how well Yitzchak was doing, and so he was kicked out. Now, by Yaakov Avinu, it's actually even more malicious. Yaakov comes to Lavan's home with nothing, and in spite of Lavan's very best efforts to oppress Yaakov and to keep him down, Yaakov actually becomes successful. Now, in spite of the ridiculous conditions that Yaakov and Lavan set for Yaakov's wages, Yaakov is becoming wealthy. At which point, the children of Lavan come to Lavan and say that Yaakov has taken all of your things. And their proof for this is, well, Yaakov came in with nothing and now he has a lot. So therefore, he must have stolen it from you. In the very next pasuk, the Torah tells us that Yaakov sees Lavan's face, and it's not like it was beforehand. The Netziv explains that this negative report brought by the Bnei Lavan to Lavan was the grounds for a libel that was to be perpetrated against Yaakov Avinu, to steal his wives back, to steal his children, to steal everything that he had on this grounds that, well, Yaakov stole all of our stuff and now we're entitled to take everything away from him, even though it was a lie to begin with. You fast forward and you see this with Paro towards the Jewish people, except in Egypt, our great crime wasn't even prosperity. It was just that there were so many of us. And that was intolerable. And by Haman, our great crime was the fact that we were different and we had different ideas. And that justified to the entire kingdom our genocide. Right? These are the origins of the hatred towards the Jewish people. It is prominent wherever we go. And in every distinct instance, it's someone else hating us for a different reason. So we can either say that each and every instance was different and independently justified and we deserved what happened, or perhaps there's really an underlying cause for Jewish hatred, and the manifestations of that hatred that we see in every single generation, well, that's just the excuse. Chazal teach us in the Sifri by Yaakov's interaction with Esav, the dots written above Esav going in to kiss Yaakov, that he was actually going in to kill Yaakov and was protected by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There, Chazal teach us, Halacha biyadua she'Esav sonei Yaakov. Now, had Chazal just said Esav sonei Yaakov, I may have assumed that that was a localized statement pertaining to Esav and Yaakov, or maybe something even more incidental applied to the descendants of Esav and the descendants of Yaakov. But their terminology there is very interesting and very significant. Halacha. It is a halacha, like a core religious tenet, the idea of this hatred from Esav towards Yaakov. It's not incidental and it's not random. It's a core tenet, a religious tenet, that this hatred exists. In which case, it begs the question, why does this hatred exist? Why is the world hell-bent on hating us wherever we go in every single generation? What's the cause? The underlying cause, not the excuse that's given and refreshed and changed in every generation in accordance with what they think will be seen as passable in the eyes of society. Rav Kook writes that human beings can be pretty barbaric, but they can also be pretty great. And perhaps we want to be barbaric, but as long as there is a standard, as long as there is a people who accept a code of conduct which holds human beings to the very highest standard that they can achieve, a society which wants to be barbaric cannot pretend that they don't have the capacity to be anything greater. And that's what the Jewish people are. If we didn't adhere to the Torah consistently in every generation, reminding the world this is what human beings could be, then everyone would have the freedom to do exactly what they wanted to do, claiming, well, we can't be any better than this. The fact that we consistently hold the world to the standard of the greatest a human being could be, the standard the Torah demands of us, we take away the excuse of any society that would like to behave like an animal. And that arouses hatred towards those who remind the world that there is this standard. And even if the world adopts that standard for themselves, they'll never forget the people who didn't allow them to behave in the way that they wanted. They'll always have hatred towards those people. But I want to ask a slightly different question. See, I believe while everyone has their choices and every society makes a choice, and independently, every society has made a choice to hate us, I believe that ultimately everything is in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hands. He must be pulling the strings. Everything is Mishamayim. This wouldn't happen, this could not happen without his approval and without HaKadosh Baruch Hu deeming this absolutely necessary. In which case, my question is, why is this absolutely necessary? What does a Kaddish Baruch Hu see as the divine role of anti-Semitism, that it must exist in every generation? The Maharal points out that our enslavement, specifically to Egypt, before we received the Torah, was not random. Because if you could have chosen a nation that was the polar opposite, ideologically, to what the Torah preaches, that would have been Egyptian society. The opposite of what we believe. That's what they believe. And that allowed for our own nature and our own beliefs and our own ideology to be clarified up against the stark contrast of Egyptian society. See, when you're around people who are too close to you, the lines can be blurred and you can forget actually what makes you unique, because you're almost the same. And so if you're a little bit different, that's easy to forget. A great modern example for that is the notion, the concept of Judeo-Christian values. Right? The idea of Judeo-Christian values is a Christian concept. It is not a Jewish concept. Jews don't believe in Judeo-Christian values. Jews believe in the Torah. Christians believe in Judeo-Christian values, right? But because we look to the same book, and because we have hypothetically the same God, right? So we're close enough that we can start to blur the lines between our values, but they're not the same, right? Well, the Egyptians were so different from us, explains the Maharal. There was no blurring. They were the polar opposite of us. There was no way to mistake that, right? And the way that we became confident in who we are and our distinct identity was by spending 210 years immersed in a society that was the polar opposite from what we believed. And I think that basically accounts for the role that anti-Semitism plays now and has historically played, and the role that HaKadosh Baruch Hu designed anti-Semitism for. You know, I tend to think back to all the nations that have tried to oppress us and all the horrible atrocities that have been perpetrated against us. And our enemies never seem to learn their lesson. Our enemies never seem to learn their lesson. If you want to permanently get rid of the Jewish people, it's not so hard. The answer is not to oppress them. The answer is to make them comfortable. Right? See, if you make the Jewish people comfortable, right? If you give them a real belief, right? A real hope that they can just be accepted and never treated as different and never hated, the Jewish people will jump on that bandwagon, right? They'll say what they need to say to be accepted, right? And then they'll be loved. And then they'll forget who they are, and then there will be no more Jewish people. But the fact that in every generation, it's pointed out to us in the most violent way possible that we are different from everyone else makes us never forget that we're different from everyone else. If you would have given us a chance to be accepted in society, if we just would have, we thought that all we had to do was forget about Torah values and parrot out the values of whatever society thought at the time, there's a very good chance that the Jewish people would have jumped on that a long time ago. But hatred is a very powerful emotion. We could have lived with people who were different from us, who looked different than us, who thought differently than us, who had different values from us. We could have lived among them and gotten very, very comfortable and ultimately probably assimilated. But we have a 4,000-year mission where the bulk, maybe the majority of that time, is going to be spent scattered amongst the world. And the question is, how do you maintain a strong sense of Jewish identity? And how do you maintain an uncompromising commitment to Torah values in a 2,000-year period where you're scattered amongst the world? The solution to that problem was anti-Semitism. The fact that the world insists on hating us wherever we go is a constant reminder that we're different. And that's what it needs to be. And if we could have been accepted by abandoning the Torah, we may have done that a long time ago. But no matter what we do and what we stand for and what we believe in, for any amount of time, we're hated. That serves as the reminder that preserved our identity long enough to make it back to Eretz Yisrael. I believe that that is the ideological necessity for anti-Semitism that HaKadosh Baruch Hu designed in the fabric of reality itself. If we are not hated, eventually we would assimilate within the rest of the world. But the world comes and reminds us in every passing generation, you are not like us, and we don't accept you. And it's time we learn the lesson. We're not like them. They don't accept us. We believe in something else. We're going to stand by that, and we're going to represent those values to the world eternally.